Welcome to the Ripple Fishing Report. I'm your host, Brad Long. Thanks for being here today, and thanks for joining us. You know, it's going to be a good show. We cover a lot of ground, and we talk to some of the guides that we talked to last week and some guides that we don't talk to all the time. So we're going to be hearing from Captain Lionel James over in the Destin area. He's going to tell us about some awesome trips he's been able to take since we talked to him last week. And, you know, he even picks up some pretty sweet bycatch, and he's going to tell us all about it. And we're going to hear from Captain Brandt over in the Pensacola area. He has some great tips for fishing offshore and going after some big grouper and some inshore stuff. So we're also going to hear from Captain Todd Jones. He's our Panama City Beach offshore specialist. And so we're going to talk to him about some of the regulations in the seasons and kind of just get his thoughts and pick his brain on some, you know, a little bit of how that stuff works and see what his thoughts are. You know, we got red snapper season coming up, and so we're going to talk to him a little bit about how he approaches that fishery and get his opinion on some of the regulations and stuff that exist. So I'm glad you're here, and, you know, the thing is, We're just gonna talk to these guys about what they've been doing, and you know, it's so important with all of the craziness in the world and all of the craziness in the weather. You know, currently we're kind of all sitting back waiting on whatever this is, tropical storm, tropical depression, whatever they've classified it, to kind of make its way north and see what it can do. You know, it's going to probably be a ton of rain and some bumpy weather for the next few days, but hopefully everybody's going to be safe and make smart decisions. You don't want to be going out there on the opening day of red snapper season, because the predictions are bumpy. Let's just say that. I think it's a pretty big wave prediction. And, you know, they're just not that good. So don't risk yourself getting out there. Don't let the guide risk you. I think most guides, most licensed captains are going to be smart in this situation. But just in case, who knows, you know, just be safe and pay attention to the weather and the forecast. I mean, I think this weekend's going to be a little bit nasty. We also talk a little bit about tarpon. You know, the thing is, tarpon season, the way this weather's been going, man, I know you keep hearing us say that over and over, but it really, this time of year, or let me just say, leading up to this time of year, it is so impactful. The water temperature and the air temperature that affects the water temperature, the amount of wind, the amount of rain, all this stuff goes into effect, ultimately, the water temperature. And you know, as we transition from the winter months to the spring months and the spring months to the summer months, that transition is kind of driven by the water temperature. A lot of the migratory species kind of follow the water temperature as it warms up. They begin to move through. The bait fish follow it. Everything that eats the bait follows them. And so you can see how it just sort of sets off this chain reaction. Well, the problem is, we've had kind of a rocky, interesting month of May as far as weather. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago, we had some really cold weather. At least cold in May terms, overnight and with the wind. And so it just really drove that surface temperature of the water in the wrong direction. And, you know, it doesn't take much, but I think it was enough to kind of push things back a couple weeks. And so you'll hear us reference this. You'll hear us talk about this. We'll get their take on what they think is kind of happening. And I'm saying all that because of the tarpon migration. You know, we've seen some fish coming through, but it hasn't been the numbers that you would expect to see soon. So I, you know, the general consensus is that we're a little bit behind where we might should be this time of year. But you know, once we have a couple weeks of warm weather, it's all relative. I mean, it's going to get caught back up, and it'll be like this never happened. But since we're following this week to week, that's kind of where we are. And I just wanted to kind of bring everybody up to speed on that and just kind of let you know sort of where the professional heads are at as far as how their outlook on this is. And so, you know, if that helps us sort of plan and sort of know what we're doing when we're able to get out, then awesome. That's the point. So, you know, we're a little bit behind. That doesn't mean anything, really. I mean, it's Mother Nature. Nothing ever goes the same year over year. It's just generalized trends. I mean, if you ask people If you ask five people when the best time of year to fish for cobia, you're probably going to get five very similar but different answers. Same thing with tarpon, same thing with everything. So, you know, it's just one of those things that the idea here is to inform you, give you professional opinions and people that do this all the time, and then kind of arm you to make your own educated decisions. So that's the ultimate goal, and that's all we're trying to do. So I hope that makes sense. So we'll just dive right in the show here. Captain Lionel had some awesome trips this past week, and he's going to tell us all about them. So, Captain Lionel, how you been doing, buddy?
Good, man, good. What about yourself?
Yeah, doing good, man. You know, it's warm out, and it stayed warm for a while.
Absolutely.
So I think things are going to get where they need to be.
Yes, sir.
So how was the weather since we talked last? Things have kind of leveled off, huh?
Yeah. It's actually, we had a pretty solid week of clear weather and not so much wind. So it's been pretty good, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Did you, were you able to get, did you go offshore or inshore? What kind of fishing did you do?
I did. I was able to go offshore, and then my guys did a lot of inshore stuff.
Yeah.
My guy Sean, he's been inshore all week, and he's produced a number of nice, really nice trout. He caught a bunch of reds today. In the sound. As for myself, I love the offshore thing, so that's really what I like to do.
Yeah.
And it's been really good, you know. With now we're in June and federal snapper season is in season, and snappers come in for state water stuff on the 11th. So everything's just kind of starting to get in motion. You know, all my clients have been really, really happy.
Yeah.
Catching a lot of vermilions, a lot of mangroves, a lot of snapper, and on one of my trips, we even caught a sailfish, man, which is pretty insane.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I shared that picture last week on social media, and it happened right after we talked. And so I want you to tell me how in the world you managed to do that.
Oh, by the grace of God, man. So we were amberjack fishing, and, you know, for me, I like to just throw anytime I get over a wreck, I like to put two free lines out. And that's just, you know, a main line with a leader and a circle hook. Really for those amberjacks, especially because they fight so hard that if you don't get them on top, you're probably, especially in state waters, you're probably not going to get them to the boat, you know?
Yeah.
So we were free lining for that. And essentially, instead of an amberjack hitting it, a sailfish hit it, which was when I thought the rod bent over. I thought it was a cobia, because what happened was the rod started to go over slowly, and it started to turn slowly, so the fish was clearly on top. So I just thought it was like a big cobia.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, this thing just starts tail walking on the top of the water. And you ever seen one of those videos that the sailfish actually jumps into the boat?
Oh, yeah.
Well, this sailfish had two other sails with it.
Really?
And when she started jumping, the other two started jumping, and one jumped about 10 feet from the boat, and I was like, you know what? This is probably how I died, because if it jumped one more time, it was coming straight in the boat. Like,
yeah.
You know, I was like, and for me, I was in shock. This is my first sailfish, like, period, ever.
Yeah.
You know, I've casted at them, couldn't get them to bite. I've seen them on the pier, but I've never caught one.
Yeah.
And then, you know, my clients, they've never seen anything like it as well. So it was like a trip of a lifetime for them. But it was a special moment, man. Like, I've never seen it dump 200 yards of line. You know, and we had to chase it down. And of course, like, it was like 2 to 3 foot sea. So we were bouncing all around. And
yeah,
it was pretty spectacular, man. It was pretty special.
Yeah, I bet, man. I've never had the privilege of hooking up a sailfish either. And I've never had the opportunity to even try. But you know what? You mentioned putting out that flat line like that. I bet you have no idea what's going to eat that.
No, you really don't.
I'm thinking kings, cobia, I mean, there's all kinds of things.
Anything. So just imagine if you're on a wreck and that's your favorite spot and you want to stay there for 2 or 3 hours, you might as well put several flat lines. You might, because you're going to start chumming anyways if you cut over some bait and start dropping stuff. So you're gonna increase your chances of catching something. And if you want to even increase it some more, then bring a chum block.
Yep.
And start chumming. And, you know, a lot of these fish are surface eaters, and they're going to, and depending on your bait, some of them, you know, like your ruby red lips, your pinfish are going to swim down and make themselves more available.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's always smart to get to a wreck and just put out one or two fly lines. Cause you just never know what's going to eat it. You know,
yeah.
Some of these big Goliaths will come up and get it.
Yeah. I mean, so I can think of, you know, anything that spends any amount of time in the middle or the upper part of the water column is on deck. You know what I mean?
Barracudas, like, cause, man, we hooked in a couple of barracudas. We couldn't get them to the boat, but it was a pretty sight to see too, because they're very acrobatic.
Yeah, they cut up for sure. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So yeah, what? So what kind of? What do you know specifically what that was? I mean, was
as
it
as far as what?
Like, was it a marlin or? I mean, like
no, just I don't. I think it's a sailfish.
Yeah. I mean, I know so little about it. It's like, is there a species called sailfish, or is it just
sailfish? Yeah. Yeah. That one is just a sailfish. And, you know, legally you're allowed to keep one.
Right.
I know it's very practiced, and I try to practice catch and release with that one.
Right.
What happens is, like, it was such a long fight. It was super acrobatic, you know, by the time. And personally, I probably shouldn't have taken it out of the water and taken a picture of my clients with the clients.
Yeah.
You know, but like in the heat of the moment, they wanted a picture. I wanted a picture.
Sure.
You know, we couldn't get out of the waters were way too rough to even like jump in with the fish.
Yeah.
You know, so by the time we did that and the fight was over, we tried to revive it. It ended up passing. And so we kept it. And it was illegal. So it was actually 89 inches and it ended up being 64 pounds, which is really, really big for a sailfish.
Yeah.
So
are they, I mean, they eat good, huh?
I honestly assume so.
I'm not sure. I mean, you just, you know, the image you put on social media, there were some comments and some people seem to think that they did. So I just have to take their word for it, you know?
Yeah. I don't, you know, I've never had one. I've never even bought it out of the store. So
yeah,
I have no idea. I'll have to ask them because they kept every last bit of it. And I kept the bill, you know, so I'm gonna have that mounted and
oh, that's cool.
And done pretty. So
yeah,
you know, like in hindsight, if I could do it again, I wouldn't have taken the picture, but you know, to say would it have lived after the fight? Cause what happens is a lot of marlin, a lot of tuna, you know, I have a friend that caught a 400 pound tuna about a month ago.
Yeah.
It was a bluefin, you know, something that really, 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 really rarely happens in this area.
Yeah.
And they had to let it go, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah, you know so that's
it's a catch-22 almost.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, luckily you weren't doing anything illegal. It was within your, I guess, legal right to do it. And frowned upon or not, it doesn't make any difference. I mean, those sailfish and marlin, I think just that whole species group, I only know what I've seen on TV. I mean, I've never even attempted to fish for them, but they seem to be, they fight so hard and they seem like they're not terribly hardy as a species.
Right.
And so with the hard fight and the idea that they're pretty easy to kill, you know, they almost do themselves in, you know what I mean? Cause I see again, TV, who knows what happens when the camera gets cut off, but they really spend a tremendous amount of time trying to revive them and they have gear where they're targeting sailfish.
Right.
And so that's, you know, you get them in a little quicker, hopefully, and then you're able to kind of bring them back and let them go. But, you know, there's no reason to let something go that you know is going to die. I mean, you're smart enough. You have enough experience. Yeah. I mean, what's the sense in that, you know?
Right.
And honestly, I feel that way about red snapper, triggerfish, amberjack, everything. Yeah. The problem is you get fined if you do that, you know, even if it's a keeper. So
it's a tough situation because I understand the laws in place to protect the fish, you know. However, the other day I actually had to move because we were catching several snappers and the dolphins were just outrageous. So every snapper that we caught, we had to go and we threw back, a dolphin ate it. So essentially it was decreasing the population again, you know?
Yeah. No, which it's silly, man.
So it's a catch-22 because I understand the conservation side of it. And I really, I'm happy for it because it's done wonders to our red snapper population.
Sure.
Know? It's just, I don't know. I don't think there's anything you can really do.
There's not a good... answer for it. I mean, you know what's silly to me, and maybe I'm wrong in this thought, but I think if you were to be, you know, if you were bringing up a snapper, shark, dolphin, something takes half of it, and it's not snapper season, if you throw that other half in your cooler, I think you still get in trouble. I mean,
yeah, you do.
And that's
even though it's clear, it's a telltale sign that it's gotten eaten by something
yeah.
else. You know?
And I mean, what's the sense in that? I mean, something's right. going to eat it, you know, whether it's right. us or what, you know, when you throw it back in there, something's getting it. But why do that, you know? And I know there's no way to have those kind of loopholes in the laws and in the way it's set up.
For sure.
You put too much trust in people.
Right.
But
I mean, you have to have your checks and balances.
Right.
You know, that's just part of it.
But man, some of that stuff is just painful. It's like, you know, this would still be good.
Or
it's going to die anyway. Like, why am I putting it back? But it happens all the time. And especially in our area because of all these seasons.
Absolutely.
I mean, how many red snapper have you caught? I know for me, and I haven't even been offshore tons of times like you have, but
right.
you get them and you're like, well, this one ain't going to make it, but there's nothing I can right. do about it, you know?
Countless. Yeah, countless. So.
Yeah. Just the way it goes. Well, that's an awesome story, man. And those, that is, you know, if you're not targeting them, that I would say that is rare that you're able to get one in the boat. So that's awesome, man. So, what are you seeing out there? Are you seeing tarpon? Are you seeing some cobia and stuff still?
I haven't seen any tarpon yet on my trip yesterday. So usually what happens this time of year is the redfish school up really good and the sharks get here because the bait gets here at the same time.
Right.
You know, everything follows the bait. So the black tips and spinner sharks are abundant around the jetties.
Yeah.
And then the schools of redfish as well right off the beaches. My trip yesterday, ladies, they must have caught 10 or 12 sharks, and right off the beaches, maybe 30 yards off the beaches,
yeah,
a couple yards from the jetties. That's really the first thing that gets here, too, along with the ladyfish, they're following all those. So, I mean, there's plenty of fun fish to catch that are right there on the beach.
Yeah.
No tarpon yet. I haven't seen them. I've heard, but I covered a lot of water yesterday. I didn't see one. So
yeah.
maybe next week. You know, we're getting ready to go through another storm tonight, so
yeah.
who knows what that brings. So it's just, we'll see here soon.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of fish out there to be caught.
You know? Oh, absolutely, for sure. And I think at this point it's safe to say we are in this summer pattern. Well, I mean, we even have our first tropical depression.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's summer. Whether we were ready for it or not, I think it's here now. And I think the fish will quickly catch up and begin to act accordingly. You know,
for sure.
But with that, you know, I would expect that there would be, you know, I know just in the last week, talking with Brant, talking with Justin, they've seen some in Panama City and in Pensacola. I don't think the numbers are quite like what they're gonna get,
right?
But they're kind of around, you know. So I think it's any time now. There's gonna be some of those normal size schools that migrate through. Yeah, well, that's awesome, man. So, what's your plan? I mean, are you planning to go try to go out some, or is you just kind of see what the storm does?
Honestly, like, well, if the storm comes, we're just any day I could be on the water, I'm gonna be out there.
Yeah,
you know, like especially with it getting like this, and the snapper opening on the 11th for my waters. You know, hopefully, things are picking up, and I'll be able to take a lot of people out there. Nonetheless, I'll go out to try to do a YouTube video for them. And just be on the water. I wait all winter for this time of year, you know.
Right.
So
yeah.
There's no way if it's nice, I'm going outside.
Yeah. No, I can't blame you. And so with that said, with snapper season, you're probably booking up a little bit. So tell us how we can get a hold of you if someone wants to come down and book a snapper trip or maybe chase some of these tarpon.
You know, if you're down here, just look me up online at lionstailadventures.com. If you're trying to see and learn a few things on how to catch them, I'm definitely going to put a video up here in the next couple of days of on my YouTube at Lionel James Fishing. And just come down here and just have some fun, whether it be Destin, Panama City, or Pensacola. Some really good guys out there between Justin and Brand, and we'll be sure to take care of you.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, thank you, Lionel, and hopefully
Absolutely.
You'll be able to get out, you know, and we'll talk again next week and see what you're up to.
Yes, sir.
Awesome.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Lionel.
All right.
Thanks for the update, Captain Lionel. It sounds like things are really going off down there in the Destin area. And, you know, a sailfish, man, what a bycatch. You know, I've never caught a sailfish, and I've been very open about my lack of experience in true offshore blue water fishing. And you know, the thing is, it's not that I don't want to do it. It's that I just haven't had the opportunity all that often, and I've enjoyed it. But you know, you go out with a captain, and they know what they're doing, and so I don't ask a ton of questions about different things. I mean, you know, live bait, dead bait, that kind of stuff. I'll get into, but I don't ask about line size, knot type. You know, types of rods, types of reels, all that kind of stuff. So it's one of those things that I just don't have a tremendous amount of experience about. And some of that is just because of what I choose to do. I'm an inshore guy, and I like to throw the fly rod around and pull the skiff around and kind of see what I'm going to try to catch. And so, you know, just difference in opinion and difference in how we choose to spend our time on the water. But I enjoy it, you know, and I certainly like to eat it. So it's not something that you know, it's more of I've got a lot invested in inshore, and you know, I don't know that I would have a happy wife if I decided to make similar investments in offshore equipment as well. So kind of had to pick one, and I landed inshore. So that's kind of where I'm at with my knowledge base. But you know what, I know sailfish are not terribly common, and I know they're not terribly common for the way Lionel caught that one. So that's awesome. And you know, you'll see the pictures on social media if you follow Lionel or the Ripple Fishing Report pages. And just an incredible catch, fish of a lifetime kind of scenario for his clients and even for him. And so so that's awesome. So congratulations on that. Up next, we're going to hear from Captain Brant Peacher. Captain Brant is best known for his work on Angler Up with Brant. That's his YouTube channel. And I think I forgot to ask him to shout it out when we spoke. So check him out there. He's putting out tons of new information every week, every couple days. There's just always something new on there. He does a great job with it. So follow him there, and if you need to hire him for a trip, you know, check him out. You can reach out to him through through YouTube, and you know, book a trip and get out and see what the Pensacola area has going on. So, Captain Brant, how you doing?
Doing great, man.
Awesome, man. So, have you been able to get out and get on the water a little bit since we talked last?
Yeah, I've been two or three times, actually.
Nice. So we're inshore or offshore, or how'd it go?
I've done a little of both. I went offshore one day, and I went inshore, I went inshore all day Sunday. So
okay.
Both great trips.
Yeah. So I saw a video of you today, I think, and I saw a picture of a big grouper, mm-hmm. and then I saw you catching some croakers and catching some redfish.
Right. Yeah, that was so the grouper was on Friday.
Okay.
And one day or a day or two before actual grouper season opened. And then we went offshore about 15 miles and probably caught 30 or 40 mahi, caught a cobia that was legal, and caught some grouper and big snapper and other stuff like that.
So. Yeah. So is there anything that you look for in particular for those grouper trips like that? Is there anything specific, water depth or bait or anything that you do different?
Yeah, like if I'm going to specifically target grouper, depending on what kind, I usually like to target them in really deep water. But I do also, when I do that, I do a lot of like grouper fishing for, you know, deep water scamp and snowy grouper and even warsaws and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I tend to do a lot more of that than I do gag grouper fishing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can catch the gags in really shallow water up into the bay even and really on any wreck out there. So.
Yeah. What's your preferred bait when you target grouper?
So I really like a live croaker. It's okay. One of my favorite baits for gags. Now, if I'm deep water grouper fishing, which I said I do a lot of, it doesn't really matter. Too big whole squid or anything, it does not matter. But for gags, I like a big live croaker, especially if I'm bay fishing for them or from shallow water wreck fishing for them.
Gotcha. So you mentioned the croaker for the big gags, and that you know, they come into the bay system. So I mean, it, obviously any kind of bridge piling could probably hold them, is it just structure, or what do you look for?
Yeah, any kind of structure in the bay like that would work, absolutely.
Yeah, awesome. Well, so I saw the pictures, like I mentioned, of the big grouper, and then a huge redfish that that a buddy of yours, I guess, kid had caught on a croaker as well. Those croakers really kind of cover a lot of ground, don't they, inshore?
Yeah, everything eats them.
The
difference is this year the croakers are really prevalent. They're extremely easy to catch, and they have not been over the last couple of years, and so that's why you're seeing me using them a lot more this year. Is because we can catch them so fast. We can catch 24 croakers in 30 minutes easy, so.
Yeah, that that goes a long way, and it you know, it just so happens that everything wants to eat it. So that's good.
Yeah, exactly.
So what have you, I saw that for the inshore trip. Obviously that's, you know, you're using croakers, kind of sounded similar to what we talked about last week, you know, with the way you fish for those big trout. It kind of seemed like a similar approach.
Yeah, similar. We did catch a big trout in the, when we were catching those redfish. We caught one right in the middle. I don't know if you saw the video or not, or watched all the way through, but this was pretty unique. We ended up catching a giant red snapper at that bridge.
That is crazy rare that they would be, you know, in like that, especially a big one.
Yeah, and catch it on 20-pound test.
Yeah, that's not something that happens every day for sure. The last time I was able to get out offshore a little bit, I was using just my inshore stuff, trying to pick up a few trigger fish on a wreck that was, you know, 2 or 3 miles out, something like that, and caught one about that same size, probably not quite as big, but it was a pretty good size one. And I was surprised. I mean, I was offshore, but just not far, you know. And I was surprised by that, so I can imagine. You know, you hear people talk about red snapper in the bay systems. I've never caught one like that.
Catch them all the time in the bay. Now it is very, they are very common on the bay wrecks. That was unique because it was way further up into the sound, and we usually never, I've never caught one there, and I've fished there, you know, my entire life, and we're fishing in like 15 to 18 foot of water.
So. Really?
It was pretty unique to catch that fish.
Yeah, I didn't realize your water depth was that shallow. Guess I think of I see some of the channels and things that run under these bridges, and I always think that okay, there must have been a deep hole or something that, you know, I just didn't know about. But that makes it even more strange that it was in shallow water like that. Well,
exactly.
So I saw I guess kind of the highlights of that trip. And I did see that red snapper, and it was a good one. A little bit early, but it was a good one.
Sure.
Were you able to get out and did you fish any with artificials?
Yeah, we did a little bit off camera. We found a bunch of red. There's a ton of redfish on the beach right now.
Really?
I mean, man, we saw a lot of different schools of redfish. Lots of twos and threes, and then we found a school of probably 20, 25, and, we sat there and caught those, catching them on Berkeley bolt jerk shads and shrimp and stuff like that.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I've tried fishing the beach a little bit, and I have seen fish, but I know that, you know, certain times of the year. And do you think those fish are coming in? Do you think they're going to end up being inshore, or are those fish going to just keep kind of doing what they're doing?
Yeah, it's hard to say because, I mean, you can really ride the beach and find them, you know, year-round. But the conditions just have to be perfect, and they were perfect the other day. You know, you want that you want super clear water. And the other day was one of the clearest water days that I've seen on Pensacola Beach. I mean, it looked like the Bahamas.
Huh.
You also want it to be super calm. And so it's rare to get those, you know, two combinations. And so when you do, you can really find a bunch of redfish. And it's funny that they'll be 5 feet from the beach where the waves are crashing onto the beach. That's where we see the most of them.
Really? Just way up in the surf like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, I like to tell myself that I can see them from a distance and then move in if I need to, but maybe I wasn't looking close enough.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, the pompano will be out further, But a lot of those redfish we'll see with 5 to 10 feet from the beach just chilling in the surf.
Yeah. Are they feeding on anything or they're just there?
Probably crabs and stuff like that.
Yeah. I guess when you get into that zone of the surf, I mean, there's all kinds of things from sand fleas and little crabs to glass minnows and a lot of stuff we don't see, you know, because it's by design, really.
Exactly. You know, and that's why when I surf fish, I always put a short rod out. Because, you know, I'll throw my pompano rods out, but I'll also put a rod 10, 15, 20 feet from the beach, and that's the one that usually catches the redfish.
Yeah. Isn't that something? I mean, I tell myself that, I don't have a tremendous amount of experience running the beaches, and it's just because my boat makes it more complicated. You know, it has to be, like, the perfect day. And the odds of me being down there on that day just doesn't line up very often. But the times I've done it, you know, I kind of caught, you know, push myself out a little bit so I could look for, you know, schools of everything, jacks, redfish, and then cobia and just everything that moves up and down the beach. And so I tried to kind of get positioned. I don't know, maybe 100 yards off from the surf or so. Is that too far, or do you just kind of follow that second sandbar and just
depending on the water clarity and the wind and not the visibility that day, you know, I'll kind of weave in and out and just, you know, wait and kind of look for the action and the activity and the bait and the, you know, and then all of a sudden I'll spot a redfish and then I'll get on that line and that's when I usually start seeing them. So.
Yeah. You know, the thing is with all those fish, I mean, even the redfish, they kind of get pale when they're on the ocean side like that, but you still see them. They still contrast really nice.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
cobia, absolutely. And, I mean, all that stuff. Pompano, not so much, but everything else, I mean, it stands out like a sore thumb. So it's like if it's there, you're really not going to miss it if you're looking for it.
Absolutely.
That's kind of what I tell myself, you know. But then you think, well, I didn't see many, so surely I missed something. But maybe not, you know.
Sure.
So what are your thoughts on the upcoming week? I mean, I haven't looked at the weather and I don't really know. I know it's going to be hot and I know that it's going to be probably kind of weird because there's some tropical stuff that is happening in the Gulf.
I mean, the bite may be pretty good. Like it usually is once there's a pressure system like this coming in into the Gulf, and you know, who knows what's going to happen. Who knows if the weather's going to be even doable to get out, but yeah. The bite's usually pretty good. They're starting to catch a bunch of king mackerel in close and lots of bait around all the nearshore wrecks. And there's just a lot of fish to be caught right now.
Yeah. Do you ever target tarpon up there?
Yeah.
So
we saw quite a few the other day.
Okay. So yeah. So that was my next question. And that's one of my favorite fish to catch. So I really want to kind of dive into how you fish for them in the Pensacola area. I mean, is there anything that you do that would be perceived as different from maybe other parts of the panhandle?
You know, not really. I mean, the Pensacola tarpon are really hard to catch versus if you go down to Fort Okaloosa and Panama City, they get a little easier.
Yeah.
You know, I would say one thing, I mean, the biggest key is when you see a school of tarpon, like if I'm in a boat and I see a school of tarpon, I want to get way, and you usually can see them from a long way off.
Yeah.
I want to get way, way in front of that school. And when I throw a bait out, I want to make sure that bait lands 30 yards sometimes in front of that school and let it just float down to where that school swims right over it. And, you know, that's about the only way you're going to get a bite. If you try to bomb them or throw a real lively bait in the middle of them or something, you're never going to get a bite. It's just not going to happen. And so you want to be, it's really stealth fishing, and I don't like a super, super live bait. I like a half live bait or a dead bait.
Yeah.
And I like it. I like to throw it way out, and I like it to be mid water column about where those fish are swimming. And once they swim over and that's how you get them to bite. So.
Yeah. So what's your choice bait?
You know, I'm probably, and the only reason I say this is because I'll go with a cigar minnow or LY, but the cigar minnow, you can throw them better, but they eat them LYs really well.
Yeah.
And so, either one.
Yeah. Have you ever used, and I think the problem in the panhandle is that they're too big, but ladyfish, if you can get a hold of a ladyfish in the like 10 to 12 inch range, those are really good baits too. But in the panhandle, they get big and you just don't catch or see a lot of them that are that size.
That's correct.
But in South Florida, we would use those for bait. We were able to get some of the smaller ones, and boy, they would eat those up.
Yeah, and you know, I've fished both South Florida and the Panhandle. Those tarpon down there eat way better than they eat up here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just when they're here, for some reason, they're focused on migrating, and that's about it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you can catch them. I mean, I'm not saying you can't, but, like, it's just tough when they're just swimming down the beach like that and not feeding.
Yeah. Do you think that some of it is your sort of the last stop in at least in the Panhandle?
Potentially. But then you've got Okaloosa Pier, where in Fort Walton Beach, where the tarpon will eat everything that hits the water.
Yeah.
And so those tarpon are super aggressive, and that's not far from Pensacola. So it's
right.
Just once they leave Okaloosa, it's harder and harder to catch them.
Yeah. You know, they have that migration route, and you know, there's some key places that every fisherman's heard of. I mean, Boca Grande Pass and Holmesassa, and some of these areas further down south where they kind of lay up and sort of spend some time and then kind of keep up with the migration. And I don't know if they're waiting for the water to warm or if they're feeding or if they're just kind of taking a break or all the above, you know.
Sure,
But I wonder if there's something similar, you know, just maybe even in the Destin, Panama City area. Or I know, you know, you go a little bit further south of Panama City, and there it's kind of a known fishery. And I wonder if they're just sort of harassed and bothered to the point that the dumb ones have been caught, let's say, and released, but still they're a little more tentative.
Yeah, I mean, for me, tarpon need to be in a feeding mode to catch them. And so for some reason – like Okaloosa Pier attracts the right kind of environment for those tarpon to feed.
Yeah.
And so when they get to that pier, they start milling around and they don't migrate. And when they mill around, they're feeding and they're super aggressive. Sort of the same way when they get into Pensacola Bay.
Yeah.
When they get into Pensacola Bay, you'll see them blowing up on baits and they're super aggressive. They're in a feeding mode. But then that period from Okaloosa Pier to Pensacola Pass, it's almost like they're just in a migration mode and they're not interested in feeding. You'll get one to bite every now and then, but it's just not, they're not feeding for some reason. It's really strange.
Yeah. Yeah, they're such an adapted animal. I mean, it's who knows what kind of weird instinctual thing that makes them just, you know, kind of put the pedal to the metal and blow right by, whereas these other places they kind of stop and eat, and you know, who knows. But
exactly.
It's one of those, how far into the bay system they go? I know you've talked about catching some juveniles and some things even since you and I've been talking.
Sure.
But on those big full-grown migratory fish that are theoretically going to go back out and migrate at some point, how far in do they come?
They get way up, man. The Three Mile Bridge, I don't know if you're familiar with Three Mile Bridge, but they get way up Pensacola Bay, and a lot of people target them, a lot of people catch them and are successful. And some big ones, I mean, over, you know, multiple fish over 100 pounds caught every year.
Yeah. Yeah, those migratory fish are full-grown. That is for sure. And they, you know, is there enough of a, I mean, is there a legitimate fishery when they're passing through like that? Do enough hang around where people actually go out and target them, or is it just?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know. So, I mean, you know, you kind of start in the pass and just sort of see, I mean, if, you know, I'm assuming they're going to be rolling or like you said, blowing up baits. And so, not terribly hard to find, you know,
no, they're not,
but maybe getting them to eat is a little different story.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, awesome. Well, man, thank you. And you know, I want to spend some more time on tarpon. We're kind of out of time today, but it's, you know, we're sort of in, well, yesterday, what, you know, we're in the beginning of June. And so it's sort of time for them to start showing up and time for us to go after them, I guess, is kind of the better way to put it. I think they've sort of been around, but not in numbers where they could really be targeted. So
yeah, it won't be long at all.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, thank you, Brent. And if I I'll reach out to you next week, and we'll see, you know, see if you, hopefully this storm will hold off long enough at least, you know, and you can get out some this week, but who knows? It may not even, it could go into Mexico, I guess. So who knows? I mean, at this point.
Yeah, but, exactly.
Well, good. Well, thank you, buddy. We'll talk next week.
Okay, Brent. Thank you.
Thanks, Brent. Thanks for that update, Captain Brent. You know, it sounds like everything in the Pensacola area, at least inshore, is going to eat a croaker. So if you can get your hands on some croaker for bait, you really open a lot of doors in that part of the world for what you might catch. So those gag groupers inshore, big redfish. And last week we talked about monster trout that they all eat the same thing. So that's great news if you can get your hands on some croakers in the Pensacola area, because that opens a lot of doors for you to really have a great day out on the water. And, you know, a grouper or two ain't a bad thing either. I mean, they eat good, they fight hard, and a lot of them, they're just beautiful fish. So, you know, you don't have to run to hundreds of feet of water to get after them. I mean, there's inshore opportunities for them, or nearshore opportunities with the gag grouper. So definitely take advantage of that if you haven't. Up next, we got Captain Todd Jones out of Panama City Beach. Todd is a captain with Panama City Inshore, works with Captain Justin Leak. And, you know, Captain Justin couldn't be with us this week, but Captain Todd filled in and does a great job. And so Captain Todd is the offshore specialist. That's what I call him, just because he primarily does offshore fishing, and he's a real expert on the deep water stuff and fishing offshore on some of the wrecks and picking up some kings and really just everything out there. I mean, it's a different world compared to the inshore, and he does a great job of putting his clients on fish. So we'll get right into it. Captain Todd, how you been doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing good. Doing really well. The weather here's nice and overcast, so we're not blistering hot, so it's a great fishing weather.
Yeah, that's I tell you, man, having a little bit of cloud cover is not a bad thing. You don't always feel like it's supposed to feel when you're on the coast, but it's certainly welcome relief once we crack 90 degrees.
Hey, it could be cloudy for the rest of summer as far as I'm concerned. That'd be fine with me.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I tell you that. I don't know how you guys do it every day. That sun, it puts it on you.
Yeah, you definitely got to wear some good sunscreen, some good sun clothing, and a hat.
Yeah, absolutely.
And and keep hydrated.
That's it. And some good glasses.
Definitely got to have good glasses.
Well, good. So yeah. We haven't talked for a little while, but have you been able to get out and do a little fishing in the last few weeks?
Oh yeah, I fished this morning.
Okay.
First thing this morning, I got me some live bait from Captain Charlie at the bait barge, and then went around the whistle buoy or the sea buoy, whatever you want to call it, and we caught some kings and some bonita there.
Okay.
And then I went off to a little bottom fishing spot, and we fished there for I bet you 2 hours, and every single bait down got bit.
Really?
I mean, yeah, we had a really nice box full of a vermilion snapper, caught a bunch of triggerfish that we let go because the season's out, and then we caught a lot of the white snapper. They're actually pink porgies, but we call them white snapper.
Yeah.
It's another really good eating fish.
Okay.
And then caught a few small groupers, and that's about it. We fished there until we finally ran out of bait. I was like, well, let's go try to catch a couple more of these big kings.
Yeah.
So we left there and hit another spot and had us a real nice king that we put in the box. And it was just a really good, really good morning. Missed all the rain. Didn't get rained on and overcast and just perfect fishing conditions.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Were you using cigar minnows?
Yep. That I went by Captain Charlie's and bought cigar minnows from him, and there's lots of bait out in the Gulf right now.
Yeah.
I mean, just about every one of the buoys out here is loaded with Spanish sardines and cigar minnows and stuff like that. So you can catch your own bait now if you want, or you can go buy it. I just find it a lot easier to go get a $20 shot of bait from Captain Charlie. That way I got there's no doubt whether I'm catching bait or not.
Right.
It's in my live well.
Yep, exactly. I do the same thing whenever I usually will pick up some pinfish or something from him and drop them around the bridges and things like that inshore. And it's a lot easier doing that than trying to catch your own.
Yeah. There's a lot of times when I can't get bait from him, so I have to catch it myself.
Yep.
And when I have the opportunity just to go buy a little bait, I'm going to buy it.
Yep. I agree 100%. So you got red snapper season coming up.
It is. It comes in next week on the 11th.
Yep. So is there anything, do you have any kind of tips or anything you can share? I mean, look, red snapper are not hard to catch. I mean, it's just catching them in the right time of year. You know, there seems to be no shortage.
That's it. I guess the best advice I could give someone coming in from out of town, if they're coming in, is to watch the weather.
Yeah.
And just because you come here with your boat, if the weather's not good, doesn't mean you have to go fishing.
That's a very good point. And
every year, that opening day of snapper season, you would not believe how many bass boats we see sunk and everything else. People are in equipment that they should not be out there in the Gulf in.
Yeah, bass boats, huh?
That's bold, man.
That's a brave person there.
I've seen people go out in boats, in freshwater boats, go out of that pass and stuff that I wouldn't even think about going out of my boat, but they just don't know any better, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, there's a little bit of, well, I'm down here and I brought the boat and I'm using it.
Yeah.
But you got to put that aside sometimes if it's not safe, you know.
Oh, absolutely. There's no fish out there anywhere is worth your family's life or your life.
No, absolutely not. And so if you wanted to target the bigger red snapper, is there anything specific you do, or is it just a roll of the dice of what comes up?
Nah, well, really, I mean, if you're targeting a bigger red snapper, you need to just be, the further off you are, typically the bigger snapper you're going to catch.
Yeah. So deeper water is a good idea.
Yeah, that's, you know, out there in the federal waters where there's a little bit more structure, a whole bunch more stuff to choose from.
Yeah.
But like myself, if I'm targeting just big snapper, which I typically don't, because really the great big snapper just aren't that good to eat.
Really?
No, they're not. It's, you know, it's almost the equivalent of that, you know, do you want to shoot a nice 80-pound doe, or do you want to eat 160-pound buck in the rut?
Yeah. See, that's a good point. And you know, I kind of should have known that, but I'll be honest with you. I like red snapper. I mean, I like eating it, but there's other fish I like just as much. You know,
there's a lot of fish that I like better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. I mean, it's good. And honestly, if it were open, you know, I don't want to say year round, but if it were more open, than it is currently or for the last several years, I don't know how often I would eat it. I think it's more of a novelty. You know?
It is. I think the thing is that they've created these short seasons. And it's like the derby fishing up in Alaska for the crabs, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I got to get out there. It's open. I have to go catch a red snapper.
Yep.
But, you know, it. And don't get me wrong, red snapper are great eating fish, and we love catching red snapper.
Yeah.
Just because they're such good fighting fish and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I see them as more than just something just thrown up on the plate, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I would say I like triggerfish a little better.
Absolutely. I wish triggerfish was open year round, because I definitely would keep one every time I went fishing.
Yeah, exactly. Because triggerfish, in my opinion, eat better, like you were saying. I mean, and it's funny because there doesn't seem to be much of a shortage on those either offshore. You know,
there's not. I'm not really sure their rhyme or reason or their theories behind the way they close these seasons. I'm sure that they have some scientific evidence somewhere that they're not telling us about.
Yeah. You know, it would be really nice if they could adjust and reopen some of these seasons as quickly as they've put them in place. You know, because,
yeah.
I mean, red snapper's a good example. Look, maybe back when they – I don't know how long there's been a snapper season and all this. Do you might know. I mean, 10, 20 years? I mean, it's been a while.
It's probably been about 20 years since we started really having regulations on them.
Yeah.
Growing up, I mean, we just, there was no size limit and you could keep as many as you wanted.
Right.
But, you know, and I'm sure that there was a impact at some point in time from overfishing, but it's certainly not that way right now.
Yeah. And that's you would think that in 20 years, I think it's clear that if there was ever a problem, that same problem doesn't exist in the red snapper fishery.
No.
And let's back off this a little bit and find some kind of balance. But that's the part that they're not good at, you know?
No, and I've always said, you know, they should open, you know, hey, make it one fish per person, you know, and make a boat limit and leave it open year round.
Yeah.
You know, hey, you can keep one fish per person and you can keep 10 per boat.
Yeah.
You know, so, something like that. That way the bigger boats will be able to keep a nice mess of fish. You know, same thing with grouper, make a boat limit, you know, make it one per person or two per boat, but keep it open year round where people can catch them and they're using the resource and they're able to, you know, justify going out there burning all that fuel and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Cause that's the issue. I mean, to get into, you know, decent size and decent numbers, I mean, you got to go pretty good ways.
Yeah, at times there's, I mean, we do have we're very fortunate right here in Panama City that we have a lot of good structure within state waters, and there's a lot of there's a lot of fish out here, and there's a lot of stuff to fish when we're able to spread out. You know, the problem happens when they open state waters and they leave federal waters closed. And then everyone's piled into this one little, it'd be the same thing as say you have 100-acre bass pond.
Yeah.
And then you go and stake off 1 acre and tell them, okay, everyone can only fish in this 1 acre right here.
Yeah.
I mean, those fish in that 1 acre would get hammered real fast.
Yeah, they do.
And then all the fish out there in that other 9 acres, you know, they're out there going all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, there's whereas if you spread 10 guys out over that whole pond right there, they wouldn't do as much destruction to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I think the people in general, fishermen, I guess, would support a little bit more of this regulation if it didn't feel permanent.
Yeah. And I think that they could go down to, you know, like I'm saying, you know, don't have a closure for 9 months out of the year and have something, you know, one fish per person. Most people are happy. Most people are not trying to go, especially if it's open all the time.
Yeah.
You're not trying to go in a 30-day period to fill your freezer for the year.
Right.
You know, if it's accessible all the time, you're going to go out there, fish for the weekend, take a couple fish home that you want to eat.
Yep.
And then next time you want to do it, you're going to go do the same thing.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of different ways they could go about it. I think the key is they just have to try to do something to pull us back into reality, you know. And they just don't seem to do a good job on that side of it. And, you know, because eventually, you know, there's – just talking with Justin and you and some of the other guys over the, over the last couple months, there's issues with, you know, the cobia fishery has suffered a little bit. The trout fishery, they've changed some of those regulations this year.
Yes, finally. It's crazy. You have professional charter captains going to these boards and telling them, hey, y'all need to close this.
Yeah.
Y'all need to limit this. You know, these fish are in trouble, and they don't listen to you about the stuff that's in trouble.
Right.
But the stuff that everyone can plainly see is not in trouble, then that's what they're concentrated on.
Yeah, it's kind of the easy way for them to, I guess, move the needle or even just give the appearance of moving the needle and not risk, you know, being wrong or not. You know, it's just kind of a safe play at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing is, a red snapper is a pretty aggressive fish, and so is, you know, a triggerfish, for example. Or, I mean, any of them. They all have seasons and regulations now. I mean, amberjacks, everything. And, you know, you get too overpopulated with certain species of fish like that, and it does detrimental damage to other species that maybe they aren't looking at. And they know all this stuff.
Yeah, they know it. I don't really know their method of their madness. I haven't figured it out yet.
I don't think anybody does. I really don't. And I mean, we got to do something, and there needs to be, you know, it needs to exist, but they just, like I said, if they could do a better job of saying, okay, let's do something different with red snapper, we've kind of fixed the original problem, then I think people would have more faith when they try to do some of the other things they do, you know?
Yeah.
But that's just...
I think so.
I mean, I think everybody's a little suspect of government these days. And so this sort of thing doesn't help, you know, for just what we like to get out and do. So are you booking up pretty solid for red snapper season getting kicked off?
I am booked through the middle of July.
Wow. So yes,
so I've got everything that I can handle right now.
Yeah. Well, so is it still amberjack season?
No, amberjack closed May 1st, I believe it was.
So
Grouper just opened.
Okay.
Grouper,
so that's what I'm thinking.
Grouper is open. Red snapper will in federal waters is open. It'll open in state waters and federal waters the 11th.
Okay.
For recreational fishermen.
Okay.
And that's the thing with right now the snapper season is open for people with federal reef fish permits.
Okay.
So the charter captains with federal reef fish permits, they're opened in federal waters. So June 11th, all the recreation season opens for state and federal waters.
Okay, I got you. So the 11th is the big day. See, I'm in Alabama.
The 11th is the big day.
Yep. Alabama's had it open since the 1st, maybe before that, but it's been for a few days now.
Yes. They just opened it all up for both state and federal.
Yeah, okay. Well, so right now, you know, you're targeting kingfish and grouper, just kind of the everything kind of.
Yeah, and we're catching a few dolphin still, you know. They're starting to show up more and more each week. They're starting to get a little bit bigger now. I caught a couple of them a few days ago. I haven't really targeted them the last couple of days, but I think Saturday or so I caught some.
Okay.
So that all starts improving too as the water temperature comes up and get these good southeast winds and stuff like that.
Yeah. And it all kind of revolves around the bait and the bait movement too.
And the water temperature.
Yep, exactly. And really I think the bait moving in has a lot, you know, is water temperature driven as well. And so it's
absolutely.
All connected, you know.
It's definitely all intertwined.
Yeah. Well, good, man.
We're shaping up. It almost seems like everything's running a couple weeks behind right now.
Yeah, I agree.
With water temperature and, I mean, heck, it was 70 degrees the other morning when we woke up. That's pretty cold for this time of year.
Yeah, and, you know, it was what, maybe the third week in May? I mean, not that long ago, we were having nights that were in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
You know? And that hasn't been that long ago. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think we were on a nice trajectory through the spring, and then May kind of screwed it all up.
Yep. Starting to get a little bit cooler temperatures, north winds and stuff.
Yep, so. Exactly. Yep, and you know, and so I think you're right. I think everything seems to be falling a little bit behind. But you know what? Once we get into this summer pattern, and I think we're there, It's gonna catch back up pretty quick.
Oh, it usually goes from it seems like a little slow to okay, boom, everything just happens at one time.
Yep, exactly. Yep, and it's funny how that works, but you're right, because I'm kind of paying attention for the tarpon migration to really get kicked off, and I think with what you said, I think it's lagging a little bit.
It's lagging a little bit, and the fish when they first got here, the water was cold, and they just didn't really act right.
Yep.
The first ones that were passing through. So these next fish that start coming through, they ought to, the temperatures, they really like that water, you know, 78 degrees, I think, is the magic number for them. They really, really like that warmer water.
Yep. 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 And they probably just follow it as it warms, you know, north. I mean,
Well, they're heading over to the west to go spawn over there around Louisiana and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah. So they should be coming through any time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in
you know, May's usually the start of it, and the peak of our season is going to be July.
Okay.
Like that second week in July is really the major time right there.
Yeah. Well, they ought to be getting started with some actual numbers here soon, and so I'm kind of waiting on that to get kicked off a little bit, and as I'm kind of following the trends, I mean, that seems to be, it's not that they're not there, I guess I'm thinking of more of a fishable number, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're not wanting to look at anything right now. They like it nice and warm and clear and stuff like that. It's just been a little slow start.
Yep.
Sort of, you know, we're 1st of June. They should really be here in pretty good numbers, but you know, heck, next week they could just be piling through here.
Yep. That's it. You just don't know. And that's, you know, not to toot our own horn, but that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why a podcast like this, where we kind of just have a kind of open dialogue discussion about what's going on and what you guys are doing to try to target what is happening, is helpful, because guys like me, you know, you read about it on the internet, but that stuff usually runs at least several weeks behind. And so this way we're able to sort of keep our thumb on the pulse of what's happening down there.
That's
so
right. That's right.
We need to tear off one weekend. We could, we kind of know when to do that or when not to.
Right.
You know? Well, awesome. Well, Captain Todd, tell us how to get a hold of you. I know you said your book through Red Snapper Season, but call him anyway if you want to get down there.
Oh yeah,
there.
Absolutely. And if you know, if I can't take you, I can put you in touch with a really good reputable guide.
Yep.
One of the guys in our crew.
Absolutely.
You can look us up on PanamaCityInshore.com, or you can always find me on Instagram. That's Captain Todd Jones, and also on Facebook, Captain Todd Jones.
Awesome. Well, Captain Todd, thank you for joining us this week, and we'll talk again soon, I'm sure, because I've told you before, I've offshore fished plenty, but when I do it, you know, somebody else is kind of doing everything, so I have a lot to learn about the specifics, you know. So,
that sounds good.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, man, and we'll all talk again soon.
Yes, sir. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for that update, Captain Todd. And you know something, you know, it's nice to hear the opinion of a guide like you that's out on the water all the time, and kind of get your take on some of the regulations for the offshore species, because sometimes I think most fishermen would agree, sometimes they just don't make sense. And I know everybody kind of cringes when they see or get some inclination that the FWC is going to sort of change some of the regulations they have in place. And so, you know, it's just nice to hear a take from someone who has information and sees either the problem or the problem that has been solved, and just hear what your thoughts are. So that's awesome. So thanks for being on the show this week, Captain Todd, and we'll definitely talk again. You know, next week's going to be a great show. I'm ready to get into some tarpon. I'm ready to talk about how we target tarpon, ready to talk about how we catch tarpon, just ready for it. And so I think next week we're going to really try to hammer in on some of the methodology that the different guides use in the different areas. And you'll see some similarities. You'll hear some things that are different. And we'll just try to get our head right for the big tarpon move that's going to come through. And they're already out there. They're already coming through. The numbers just aren't there. So it's more of an opportunistic thing, I think, at this point, unless you go a little further south. But I'm excited for it. I can't wait to get down there. And if this weather will stay cooperative for a while, then that's exactly what I'm going to do. So I look forward to talking with you next week about that. Also, Captain Justin Leake should be back with us next week. And, you know, last time we talked to him, he talked to us about hand-lining a Goliath grouper. And lo and behold, he did that. So I definitely want to hear all about that. So so I'm planning to bring that up to him. You've probably seen the picture of him in the water on social media. I think there's a video that we'll try to put out in the meantime, just to kind of give you a taste of what he did there. So probably a very interesting story, and I'm really excited to hear it. So I hope you'll join us next week, and I can't thank you enough for being here. I can't thank you enough for telling a friend about our podcast and for tuning in, because it changes every week. There's a lot of similarities, but then every week is different because of the weather patterns, because of just different things that come into play that make it way better or maybe not as good as kind of we thought it would be. So stay subscribed. Tune in as often as you can, because it's something that, you know, it just changes, and you can really keep yourself in the loop, so to speak, and we just really don't want you to miss it. So thanks for subscribing, and thanks for being here. We'll see you next week.